Good morning. We ended off last week discussing that the halacha is that although kesef is a kinyan, paying for real estate is enough to be koinit, for it to become yours. But in asud kasev shtara, in a place where the norm is to write a shtar, there the kinyan is not finished until you actually get a shtar. People are not samech das. They're not secure or confident in the transaction until they actually are holding that piece of paper. As we mentioned last week, many poskim say that huadin today, where the norm is to record the title by the government, to have it to transfer the deed, until that actually happens, many say the kinyan is not completed. We said over Shem Rav Yashiv that he argued, and he said, although certainly people, the norm is to record deeds, he said, nevertheless, he says, even b'dinehem, if you have a closing, simply because it wasn't recorded, doesn't mean that the buyer or the seller can back out. Certainly, it has a tokif even b'dinehem. So, in a chanami, you'll go ahead and you'll, afterwards, you'll certainly go ahead and record it, but since between the parties, the closing is meaningful even without that, therefore, it's not similar to Asur Tekash Yishtara, and the kinyan would be nigmar right away. Now, that being said, if there is an innocent third party, if the seller, after he goes ahead and sells the property, signs all the paperwork, but before it's recorded, he goes ahead and sells it to someone else, so there already we have a nice shaila. Said from the Chazanish says you do not say dinu machus din at all, and he says whoever has it, if you have a shtar kinyan, it's yours, even if it's not recorded, and you would completely ignore the dinu machus dina. Many poskim argue, And they say even if between the buyer and seller a kinyan will be a kinyan, it's not asur tekash yishtara. Imtim Salaimer, still when you with respect to an innocent third party, here we would say dino malchus adino. And there are a number of reasons for this. First of all, as if you remember from the sugya of dino malchus adino, according to the Rama, whenever something is l'tovas b'nei hamedina, whenever you have a law that was enacted to protect society to help commerce work better. So there the Rama says, we'll say dino de malchus adino. Now certainly the idea or the concept of recording the ownership of real estate is something which is a tevis b'nei hamedina. It's a necessity. And therefore, according to the Rama, we clearly would say dino malchus adino. Now, even those that don't seem to hold like the Rama, the Minchas Yitzchok says, and the way he learns Peshat in a Chassam Sefer, that if there is a law that's made to address a problem that we see Chazal were also concerned about, so even though the law is not going to resolve the issue the same way that the Chum did, nevertheless, since this is something that Chazal made takanas for, there everyone would agree, dino malchus adino. Now the idea of recording property ownership or dealing with the problem of if you sell something and there's no call, people don't know about it, mishabodim, the idea of having a shtar, having edim, that is certainly a problem that Chazal dealt with. So although the solution back then was just when you sell something to have edim, and the assumption was that when there are edim on a transaction, word gets out, there's a call, everyone knows about it, and therefore they can protect themselves. If today, where that's not practical, today where you can, where the fact that two edim know about the sale of a property is not going to protect the public at large. So here, the fact that there's a law that says we follow who records it first, certainly everyone would agree, dino malchus adino. Now, there have been a number of dinei Torah over the years where someone bought a property, it was in someone else's name, and the person whose name it was under either went ahead and sold it, or he borrowed money, he pledged the property as collateral, and then he defaulted. So in all the cases that I'm aware about, the bottom line is the owner lost out because if it was in someone else's name and he had legal title, if he goes ahead and he sold it or he pledged it, the bottom line is the Beis Din upheld that because it was put under that person's name. In truth, even the Chazon Ish that takes the most extreme position, he says there's no dina malchus adina in that case, and he says you go by the king and you ignore who had legal title. Even the Chazon Ish says that if you go ahead and buy it and someone comes and says it really belongs to me and pulls out a shtar, he says we're only going to listen to that, we're only going to entertain that if it's a shtar with two edim. Then, if we have a shtar with two edim, chazanish l'shitasa, he says we will follow the shtar. And if it was so, and if it was sold to a third person, that person will keep it, even though he did it, it wasn't recorded. However, if you just have a ksav yad, if the seller wrote to the buyer, "I'm selling it to you," and he signed a piece of paper, that's a ksav yad. That case will not help, because how do we know, even though there's a date on this piece of paper, how do we know that this date is accurate? So normally, if I sell something to you and I write a ksav yad, in my handwriting, I'm selling it to you. So to hoidaz bal din, I was moida, it belongs to you, and I can't go ahead and deny it. Over here, where there's another person involved, I sold it to a third party, and now someone else is coming with a ksav yad that I wrote to him. Maybe I wrote this after I sold the property to this other buyer. Who says the date is accurate? I'm saying it. I'm not believed. I'm the geva dover. I already sold it to someone else. It's not a hoidaz bal din. It's coming to hurt the other buyer. And therefore, unless there are two edim, which you generally will not have, even Chazon Ish would be moida that we're going to ignore this shtar, this kinyan mishtar. And Achami, the Chazon Ish says that it's a problem. You should only buy property from someone who you trust or do careful research. Roiv Poiskim, I think, because of this problem, follow the Dino Malchus Dino and say, we will follow whoever has title. What I'm saying is, even the Chazon Ish that rejects the idea of title and goes with a Kenyan, with a Shtar, needs a Shtar with Edim for this technicality. Otherwise, we have no way to know when this piece of paper was really signed. Now again, if anyone has this temptation to put a property under someone else's name, it's very, like many things in life, it's very tempting and easy to fall into. It can create tremendous challenges and difficulties in the future, because if the property is under someone else's name and that person goes ahead and turns around and sells it, or even in a case which means well, but he borrows money, he has a business, and he runs into problems, his creditors in all likelihood will be able to take away that property, even if you would go to Bezdin and show that it was really yours and he was just your nominee. The end of the bottom line is, if you put it under his name, you are exposing yourself to very significant risk. Okay, so be that as it may, when a person pays for karka, any amount, that can be in Kenyan on the entire property. As we pointed out, even if you only pay a pruta, you pay roughly a penny and a quarter, or a penny and a half, that itself, you can buy the entire property. This leads us to two basic issues. Today, when people buy property, what do they typically do? They put down a deposit. What is the status of a deposit? Are you being kinyan the entire property? Is it kinyan? Are you being kinyan part of it? Is it kinyan at all? How do we deal with this? So the Ramah in Siman Kuf Tzadi makes a few gedarim. We'll go first start with halacha, then we'll go to what happens today. Certainly, if a person says, "Here's the 2 cents, I want to be kinyan of the entire property," if that's clearly the party's intent, that will work. Shava pruta, shava of kesef, or shava kesef, that can be a kinyan on the entire amount. Zok the Ramah. But if a person pays as an arovoin ba'alma, he makes a partial payment and says this is security. In other words, here's the money, and if I back out, I'm going to lose my money. So here, in other words, the idea is to pay the money is to force the parties to go through with it. The other Amos says if you give an arovoin, you pay half the money. What happens is you now own half of the property. It's a partial kinyan based on the amount that you paid. So if you give your deposit, you paid for 20% of the property, and the seller decides he does not want to go through with it, all he has to do is give you 20% of the property and send you home. And the opposite is true as well. In theory, if the buyer would decide that I want to back out, so he cannot demand the money back, it was already given as an arovin. But the seller would give him 1/5 of the property, and that would be it. No one would have any further obligations to each other. Now, when this happens, the buyer gets the raw end of the deal, because the halacha is, since he didn't specify which part of the property he's entitled to, we only know he's entitled to 20% of it, the seller can choose which 20% to give him. Whichever, he can choose which side, whichever side is the worst side. But again, if it's given as an aravoin, he only is koina keneged m'oisav. Okay, very good, very good. So let me address this on two levels. The first is that we're dealing with dinei mamonos, we're dealing with choshen mishpat. The parties can negotiate whatever they want. And different contracts will say different things. A deposit is hard, it's soft, there's this contingency, that it get whatever the parties negotiate, we'll have to deal with hilchos esvachta, which we'll touch upon briefly. But whatever you agree, whatever you negotiate, if it's clear in the contract, it's generally what will govern. The discussion here is that the person gave it as an arava, and I'm giving this as security. And they didn't sit down and specify exactly what that means. What are the remedies or what are the ramifications of one party backing out? On that, the Ramah is saying, if you give it as an aravoin ba'alma, if you give it as then you're koina keneged ma'isav. That if you give a 20% deposit, you are koina 20% of the property, nothing more, nothing less, and whoever backs out, that's what they'll have to do, give them 20%. Correct, 100%. So the poskim have, there's a tremendous amount of discussion. Today is it was called an edroif, which is seems to be the equivalent of a deposit. How do you deal with it, halacha l'maisa? So let me just go through the shittas, and then we'll talk about what the practice is today. Let's first just discuss a little bit what the options are. And we'll see that basically there is, you will, with any possibility, you will find a shita that understands deposits like this. The first possibility, I think the way you were describing it, was to say that it's just security. I'm putting down $50,000 for the purchase. If I don't go through with it, I lose my deposit. It's nothing more, it's a security, it's a penalty, if you will. It shows that I am serious about this. Now, that's certainly a plausible way to understand the contracts. But if that's all it is, think of it, there are some important ramifications. The first is, it comes out, it's a very one-sided deal. Because the buyer puts down $50,000, and again, no kinyan, no ischaivus, no mishabara, it's just if he walks away, he loses it. That means the buyer is locked in, he has $50,000 on the line. What if the seller changes his mind? The seller didn't give the buyer a deposit. So if we look at a deposit as nothing more than essentially a penalty, if I walk away, I lose it, then the seller has no obligation to the buyer. And he can say, here, take your money back, I'm not selling it. In other words, if it's an aravoin, like in the Ramah, once he accepted 20%, one-fifth of the field he has to give over. And if he's not interested in being stuck with 80% of the field, he now has an incentive to go through. Mashenkin, if it's nothing more than it's just a penalty, if you will, or I'm going to lose it if I back out, then the seller is not locked in. The second point is what happens if the buyer, the market crashes? And the buyer decides, you know what? I'll lose more money by closing than I will by walking away and leaving my deposit. Can the buyer just say, okay, you know what? Keep the deposit, I'm walking away. Or does he have an obligation to go through with the deal? So if it's not, if it's a kinyan, you're paying, it's a tchilas piron, so either you own 20% or there's a mishapar, there'll be something. But if it's nothing more than, here's the money, if I walk away, it's yours, then I have every right to walk away and I can leave you hanging and you have no claim again. You can't sue me for a specific performance. It's nothing more than a penalty, a knas, if I back out. So some shitas taka learn that it's nothing more than a penalty and an echanami. If Michas Pitzin points out, the seller then has no obligation. And he also points out, if the buyer, it's worth it for him, he can walk away and you cannot force him to go ahead and to go through with the deal. So that is the first shita. It's nothing more than a penalty. The other mahalach is, like the Ramah says, that no, it's not intended that everyone can just do what they want. It's a partial kinyan. You put it down 20%, you're zoicha 20%, everyone's locked into that 20%, so there are no penalties. If the buyer walks away, the seller can say, here, take 20% of the property. You're not getting your money back. Here, you get 20% of the property. The seller as well. If the seller changes his mind, the buyer can say, I paid for a fifth, so give me 20%. So it's not a penalty. It's a partial kinyan on the amount that was given. A third option is that although you only paid partially, however, the intent is to lock in on the entire property, Because it's an asar d'kashi shtaro, the transaction is not finalized yet, but nevertheless, the point of many shitas, there will be a mishtapar. And therefore, just like if by metalatalin, if you pay for metalatalin but you don't make a kinyan, either party has the technical right to back out. But if he does, there is a mishtapar. So here too, when you give the partial deposit, that creates a mishtapara. Everyone has the technical right to back out, but there would be a mishtapara. They would get this klala, which certainly is, you know, a person you know, should do everything that he can to avoid. Another option is, and this is what the Michas Pitim says. He says, who says it can't be both of them? When you pay for it, it's a mishtapara. Both the buyer and the seller committed to go through with it. They accepted money, and therefore they're not allowed to back out. If they do, they get a mishtapara. On top of that, there's a penalty. If the buyer backs out, he's going to lose his money. So both parties are locked in, have a mishtapara they're supposed to go through. The buyer has an extra chesaron, if you will, that if he backs out, he's also going to lose the deposit. The Chazon Ish, and it's said over B'Shem, the Gros Moshe, have a little bit of a different spin. They say like this. They say, really, when you pay, there should create a mishtapara. There's an obligation on both sides. The deposit is not so much a penalty, a knas for backing out. The deposit is, if the buyer wants to back out, but he doesn't want a mishtapara, it's basically a buyout option. He can buy out the mishtapara by forfeiting the deposit. No, the intent is the person makes the kinyan and he pays something, there's a mishtapara, both parties are committing to go through. When they make a deposit and they write that if the parties back out, the buyer backs out, he's forfeiting, the seller is basically agreeing that as long as you give me the deposit, I'm okay and there is no mishtapara. Now what the Chazon Ish gains with this is there's a problem over here of asmacha. We've discussed Shurim and Barichos a couple of years ago, that if someone gambles, that's generally called an asmachta. And asmachta loy kanya. If I make a bet with you and I lose, b'derech klal, I do not have to pay. Now this is not just simply true if I'm playing kvitlach or playing dreidel. It's also true whenever there's a contract and I say if I don't perform, I'm going to get hit with a penalty, that b'derech klal is also going to be an asmachta and I don't have to follow through with a penalty. Now, the Poiskim discuss our case as well. I wanted to buy a property. I went into a contract. I put down 20%, and I expected I'll be able to finance, I'll be able to raise funds for the rest, I'll get a mortgage, I'll come up with the money, I'll be able to close. Things didn't work out, and now I'm not able to close. So according to the contract, I lose my deposit. Problem is that this is an asmachta. So if the seller has a loss, and this is just compensating for his hefsid, so there already we saw, by an asmachta where you cause someone a loss and you're just paying for his damages, that would be okay. Now contracts very often say the penalty is liquidated damages. That's done for legal purposes. If it's actually true, then you would have a good argument it's not an asmachta. But in most cases, you're just picking a number out of the hat for the deposit. And when you agree that if I don't close, I'm going to give up the deposit, according to many poskim, this would be an asmachta. If it's asmachta loy kanya, you should be entitled to demand the money back. It's like this. The shitas of Rambam is that the problem of asmachta is what you were saying. Asmachta is only if I make a bet with you. So if I lose the bet, I don't have to pay you because I was never any gemiras das. I wasn't slamich das. I was very confident that I was going to be right, and it's not. And I don't have to carry through. Zok the Rambam, if you're holding on to my money, and then I make a bet with you, you better believe I'm Samech Das. Because I know good and well, if I lose that bet, you're not going to pay me back. So it's one thing when I'm just talking to you, if I don't finish the construction, if I don't finish the project by this date, I'll pay you this amount. So it's talk, I don't mean it, I'm very confident I'll get it done, asmach v'lo kanya. But if the other person is holding on to the money and I make an asmachta, the Rambam says since he's the muchzik, they're already a person of samech das and there's no problem of asmachta. Now, based on that, if the buyer gives the seller a deposit and says if I don't close by this date, you can keep it. According to the Rambam, there'll be no problem of asmachta. Now, the Rambam argues on the Rambam; it's machlokes rishonim. But nevertheless, since the seller is the mochzik, that would be a good way out. The penalty would be enforceable. We would not have a problem of asmachta, according to the Rambam, the Mechaber, and as a mochzik, he would win. But you have to be careful, because this is only if you give the deposit, it's released to the seller. Since he's the mochzik, he's holding on to it, there we don't have a problem of an asmachta. Ma'asha'enkein, if the deposit is being held in escrow, it's being held by an attorney, it's being held by a third party, and there you say, okay, if I don't close, then release the funds to the seller, then you don't say that. Since the seller is not the mukhzik, he has to go to the third party would say, okay, the halacha is asmachta lekanya, and therefore you'll have a problem. So if the money is released to the seller, then the penalty, even if it's not asmachta, is fine according to the Rambam. The seller would win because he's a mukhzik. On the other hand, if it's being held in escrow by an attorney, by a third party, there we're back to a problem of asmachta. The Chazon Ish and the Igros Moshe resolve this problem. Because they say the reason why you lose the deposit is not because it's a penalty, it's an asmachta. They say no. Really, if you're ready to accept a mishapara, you get the deposit back. What the deposit is, it's saying that even though al pi alocha, you gave money as a mishapara, it would be usur for you to back out, if you're willing to give up the deposit, you're buying out the mishapara. Now you don't get a mishapara. So then the reason why the buyer forfeits the deposit is not because of the smachta kanya, he's stuck with a penalty. If he wants to get a mishapara, he gets his money back. But since he generally will not want to accept a mishapara, his option will be, okay, keep the money, and that way I do not get a mishapara. Now today I'm not so sure that it's true, because I think today if the buyer says, keep the deposit and I want to back out, the seller still has the ability to sue for a specific performance. You know, it's a very hard case to win because you only have to get sued for damages, and usually the deposit more than covers the actual damages. So it's not so lamaisa, but yeah, I'm not so sure that understanding is the default today. No, it depends. Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish are both saying we don't have problems of asmachta. Because the penalty is not saying you owe the penalty if you don't do it. Penalty is saying if you're willing to forfeit it, I have no further claims against you. Now, in truth, today it's most likely is when you sign a contract, the whole discussion about Rovan is probably not Negea, because when you sign a contract today, there's a contract and then there's the closing. The time of the contract, there's no intent for any kinyan or even a mishapara. You're not even starting the kinyan yet. It's really nothing more than an agreement to sell and to buy in the future. So that has a host of its own issues of a kinyan etzein or a kinyan emkar, which might be a kinyan dvarim, but the simple way to understand it, it's a hischaivus. You are obligating yourself to sell in the future. A hischaivus haguf, so any kinyan that you do, if you the shtar itself is probably enough to make a hischaivus on each party to buy and sell. The penalty just might be on top of it, you know, either a smacht or a mishapara, but you probably can enforce the contract simply because it's not really an arovo, an attempt to transfer the property where we have to talk about partial kinyan, full kinyan, mishapara or not. It's really you're creating a personal obligation to sell it in the future, and that obligation, again, machlokes tzeis nesiv is a kinyan etain, but that is probably, the kinyan itself would probably be enforceable. I briefly summarize, when a person gives security today, there's a tremendous discussion among the poskim how to understand it. Halacha l'maaseh, most poskim seem to say it's a hybrid. On one hand, there is a hischaivus or a mishapara because there was a partial payment. The fact that you lose it is either an asmachta or it's a way to buy out the mishapara. By forfeiting this deposit, you're now putter from the mishapara. Now, what happens if a person buys something? Now, what happens in any of these cases where your person gives a deposit and then he changes his mind? He walks away. How do we deal, or let's change the case slightly. A person buys a property, they have a closing, and all too often, the buyer can't come up with the cash necessary. The seller, because it's a good deal, he's doing well off the deal, there's seller financing. He says, okay, pay me X amount of money, and the rest of it, you'll pay me over time. What happens if the buyer defaults? When he's supposed to, he doesn't make the final payments, he doesn't pay in full. What happens to the transaction? So here we have a few different cases. The most extreme case, where seller financing, where they have a closing, they transfer title, and now there's an the buyer executes an IOU note. He owes money, payable over the next 3 years. In that case, the Ramah very clearly paskins, it's nothing more than a regular debt. The sale happened, the transfer took place, he owes the seller money, good, so he owes the money. If he defaults, you sue him in court, you perhaps will even foreclose on the property, but it's nothing, there's no difference between him and any other creditor. The transaction, the kinyan itself is finished, and that we don't go back and reopen that the kinyan itself. This is the most extreme case where zakven alav b'milva. They specifically said, okay, it's yours. You owe me money, and this is going to be the payment plan. This is when you're going to pay me. In a case where you weren't that explicit, you bought something, and the person said, okay, here's the item, you know, we'll do the kinyan now, pay me, you owe me X amount of money. And they don't specifically say it's going to be a debt, they don't make a promissory note, they don't make up a payment plan. You owe me this money. The seller then comes to the buyer and says, okay, pay up. And the buyer drays him a cup, come back tomorrow, I'm busy now, I'm waiting for a check to clear. So what happens in these cases? So this is the sugyo of Ayil v'Nafik Azuzi. And what comes out halacha l'maisa is there are two tanan. In a case where the seller, when he sold the item, made it clear he needed the money right away. He's not selling it because it's market timing. He's selling it because he needs the money. He's going into another deal. He needs the cash. If he then, when the money is due, goes to the buyer to ask for it, he gets drayed, he comes back a second time. If the buyer doesn't pay right away, the whole deal is bottled. And the reason for that is, since it's understood that the seller is selling it because he wants the money, he came back to him twice, you drayed him a cup, the whole deal is off. He can go ahead and say, forget about it, I'm not meshuvid, certainly on the rest of the property, he has no mishtapar or any obligation to go through, he has certain rights to back out completely, but since it's clear he only sold it for the money, he's not getting paid, he has the right to undo the deal. However, this is only if when he sold the property, he made it clear that he was dochuk l'mois. He was desperate for the cash, he needed to raise money, that's why he's selling it. So in that case, even though he didn't make a tanai, he didn't write in the contract, if you don't pay by the first, the deal's off, there's no tanai. Nevertheless, it's understood. If someone needs money, he's selling the property because he needs to raise cash. If you don't pay him on time, well, there's no point to it for him. And the whole, and in that case, you can be mevatel the mecha. However, if he never, what?
He needs 81 then?
He has to prove it. If there's a hakhosha, he'll have to prove it. But if he stam sells it, the fact that he asks for the money once or twice and the guy drays him a cup, okay, so you come back a third time. It's not a big deal. It's only when it's clear he needs to get he needs the money right away, then the fact that you don't pay right away is enough to mevatel the whole mecha. Now, interestingly enough, if you do ask for the money, tells you he's busy, you come back again, he drays you a cup again. If the buyer realizes, wait a second, I'm in trouble now because I pushed him off twice, and now the seller has the right to back out. If the buyer then comes on that day, the same day, and comes and pays in full, then the deal still stands. In other words, this halacha, that once you push the person off twice, then the deal is off, is only if you don't, you have till the end of the day to remedy this situation. But if you do come before the end of the day and you pay, even though you drayed him a cup the first few times, still there the mekach is kayam. The Achrayim actually clear, what does it mean the end of the day? In halacha, when does the day end? Shkia time, or tzeis, depending on if you have a sfeika d'yom, so during the winter, you don't have that much time. So some say that, no, over here, we go by Loshen B'nei Adam, as long as before he goes to sleep, whenever that is, you come and bring him his money, the deal still stands. No, this halacha is only the day of either the day of the sale. You know, he sells it, they make a kinyan, okay, but what happened to the money? And the guy says, okay, I'll come back later, and you call him later, I'm sorry, I'm too busy. It means the day of the sale, or in some cases where at the time of the sale he says, I'll pay you next Tuesday. They make up a specific time, I'm going to come and pay. on that Tuesday the seller asks for it and he doesn't get it, then he gives him vato. On the other hand, if he just let it slide, if he sells it and then 2 days later he calls up the buyer and says, okay, where's the money? And the buyer drays him a cup, then the halacha will not apply. The normal halacha is when you sell it, the buyer takes it and then the seller says, hey, where's the money? And he says, okay, I'll come back in a few minutes. The seller then comes, okay, where's the money? Come back a little bit later. So then, since the seller sold it because he needs the money, and now you're draying him a cup, the deal is off. But if the seller just gives it to him, and then he doesn't ask for the money for another day or two, then already we say he's not so desperate. You owe the money, you have to pay it, but you can't undo a kinyan simply because you're draying him a cup a little bit. Now the Nesivas here has a chiddush, and he extends this halacha a lot. He says this whole halacha that if you dray someone a cup, you have to dray him a cup twice, it has to be that day, that's only when you're draying the person a cup. Where he comes, you're saying you're busy, come back to me later. However, Zuck the Nesivas, if when you come and say, where's my money, the Nesivas says, I'm not giving it to you. Either I'm not paying you, or if he says, I'm sorry, I'm broke, I hope to be getting money in next week, I'll pay you then. The Nesivas says, there, we don't need this sugya. There he says that an umdana, it's pashut, people who are selling things are not interested in going through these hassles, and therefore if the buyer says, I don't have the money, I need more time, there, even without this ayal v'nefek azuzi, even though you weren't megal adas at the time of the mekach, the Nesivas says, the whole deal is off, it's batel mafreya, and the seller can say, I want my item back. Now based on this, the Nachal Yitzchok says that when you buy an esrog before Yontif, you should make sure to pay for it before Sukkos. Why? He says, because even though, again, he's not worried about the kinyan d'orais, rabbanon kinyan d'orais, you do a kinyan yad. He says, but if you say you're going to pay for it afterwards and you forget, it'll come. Turns out the mekach is batel l'mafreya, and he says the entire bracha is a bracha levatal. And therefore he says, what? Well, the check, as long as there's money in the account, it'll clear. The point is, if you buy it on credit, since there's a chance you might forget about it, and you may end up never paying for it, there already there's going to be a problem, and therefore he says your person should be machmir to go ahead and to pay for it before Yontif.